United States v. Williams. Mr. Flynn.
Please, the Court. This case and our appeal focuses on the very narrow issue of the reasonableness and the justification for the initial stop by the Rockford police officers on January 11th of last year. The officers testified, Officer Shelton, that he was seated in his squad car between 50 and 100 yards away, a block away, and saw a tan Ford Expedition van pull up to a house. He observed it drive for about 30 feet, noticed that the two people in the car, the passenger and the driver, chatted for about 2 minutes, noticed that it did not have a front registration plate on it, and that there was a no loitering sign in the area.
Mr. Flynn, is it your position that every time the police walk up to the driver's side of a parked car, there's already been a Terry stop or not?
No, Your Honor. There is, and the law does recognize a consensual stop, but I don't think the facts of this case justify that.
Why not? I mean, it's not as though they pulled the car over while it was driving down the street. The car, everybody agrees, is parked, and they walk over to it. So what about this incident distinguishes it from the others in which it would be a consensual encounter?
I think it's the approach, Your Honor. They, rather than simply pull over to the curb behind it and see if there was a license plate, a temporary plate in the back.
Well, why do they have to do that? If it's consensual, you agree they don't have to do that. It can have all the license plates it needs.
Well, I think if the rationale, and they pose a couple, one of which apparently is abandoned, this of loitering, because I don't think the government's met its burden on that. But if you're looking to see if a car is registered, I think the rational and reasonable approach would simply be to pull behind it and see if it does have a temporary plate, because the officer testified that he was aware that under Illinois law, that was an alternative and legal method of indicating you had registered your
right,
car.
Right, but you're focused very much on this, and I'm wondering, the police officers walk up to the driver's side of the car. Suppose in their minds they wanted to say, you know, there's a missing child in this neighborhood, and you are here, and we wonder if you've seen anything that might help us find that child. I mean, they could have been doing anything, right?
I understand, Your Honor. I think these facts are a little different, though. It isn't just walking from the curb. They pulled alongside it, directly alongside it. They put on their flashing lights, their emergency light, which indicates a couple things to people. A, it's a flashing red light, which you see out of the periphery of your vision on a marked squad car. They testified he was parked against the curb, and they were in the middle of the road directly alongside him. I think a reasonable person might think they have an obligation to talk to a car. The fact that they're flashing red lights as opposed to the blue and red light on top, it wasn't that long ago in all our memory, I think, that the police only had flashing red lights to pull a car over. The blue is a development in the last 20 years or so. Furthermore, I think the average driver might think there was some nature of emergency or something with the police putting that light on. That's not a very common occurrence. And thirdly, we're all trained that when a police car pulls up and there's red lights, or for that matter, an ambulance or a fire truck, just to freeze, basically, and stay where you are. Secondly, it wasn't just one officer going up to chat. Two officers get out of the car. They approach the driver. When the other individual, the passenger, decides to exit the car, they surround the car and go around the back. This is in a public place. They don't tell them they're free to leave. And even the government in their brief on the Wardlow factors says it's about 50-50. I think a reasonable person, an objective driver, would not have felt free to leave at that point. And secondly, the judge's ruling is a little ambiguous, actually. It's quite ambiguous because at one point he says this pulling up alongside was akin to a stop. The word he used was like stopping somebody on a sidewalk. Later, and he rules in the alternative, he rules essentially that it's a consensual stop or a valid traffic stop. I think as to the valid traffic stop, when Illinois law gives you a temporary plate that you put on while you're waiting for your plates to come in the mail, or if you register moving it here from another state, that's a broad class of people whose liberty interests are affected by this. And I'd simply say I don't believe that is enough. I think that, like in any investigation, and I'm not asking the police to envision every possible defense to a case, but I think if you're looking to see if a car is properly registered, the simplest and easiest, in this case it wouldn't have taken a second, is to drive another 5 feet, pull over to the other curb, and just take a look. And that's essentially your argument, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Yesparo?
Morning. May it please the Court. Michael Espero on behalf of the United States. It's the government's position that the initial approach to the vehicle being driven by Marcus Williams was a consensual encounter. There was no show of force. The lights and sirens of the police vehicle were not on. The flashers that Mr. Flynn just referred to were testified to by Officer Shelton at the motion to suppress. They were simply the hazard flashers because he pulled parallel to the car facing the opposite direction and was in the middle of the roadway. It was something to indicate.
He's like blocking traffic at this point?
Officer Shelton's squad car was in the middle of the roadway, according to his testimony, and he put the flashers on to indicate to any other vehicles that may be in the area that he was there. It wasn't a show of police force in the sense that there were lights and sirens on to indicate to Mr. Williams that the police intended to pull him over. They got out of the car, walked up to Mr. Williams' vehicle, and Williams rolled the window down voluntarily. This is tantamount to a police officer walking up to somebody on the street and starting to ask a few questions. That person is free to leave, free to answer the questions or not answer the questions as they deem fit. That's exactly what Mr. Williams did. He voluntarily rolled down the window. At that point, Officer Shelton noticed the odor of cannabis, a baggie in Mr. Williams' hand.
He could just have driven off.
I think he could have just driven off, whether the police would have followed him or not, based on what they saw.
At
he sure would have followed him.
At what moment do you think he could just have driven off? Certainly not after he smells the marijuana.
At that point, probably not, because and Judge Reinhart made the finding that at that point he believed there was probable cause to arrest Marcus Williams.
So as the officer is walking up to the car, if Williams had floored it and zipped off, do you think the police would have given chase?
I can't speak for Officer Shelton or Officer Solis.
Obviously they would.
They would have.
Wouldn't they? Come on.
Probably so.
Probably. There's no probably about it. If he would have floored it and took off, they would have followed him.
But that doesn't change the nature of the initial encounter.
That might be true. But don't say they wouldn't have followed him. If he would have floored it and took off, they had the red light sirens on, and they'd be chasing this guy and pull him over.
The fact of the matter is the initial encounter was not one where they showed any police authority. Yes, there are police officers in uniform. They didn't pull their guns. This was in a public spot. Only two officers. Mr. Flynn referenced that the car was surrounded. The passenger got out of the vehicle, and Officer Solis went around just to start talking to the passenger. The probable cause to arrest flowed from what happened after Marcus Williams rolled the window down, and that was the smell of cannabis, the plastic baggie that he dropped and then came up with an empty hand. Then he did floor it, and he took off, and the officers gave chase, and that's when the firearm was tossed out the window. That was later recovered. The other theory, which Judge Reinhart made the decision on, was that there was a traffic violation here. But that
seems to me very weak when you consider the number of states that don't even require a front license plate. It sounds like Illinois police can go around arresting anybody from some 20 different states in the union whose residents drive legally on the roads of Illinois. It just seems to me to look at and discover there's no front license plate doesn't tell you enough to decide there's a traffic violation.
Well, I think it tells you that there's probable cause that there
Why?
May be a traffic violation.
Why? If the probability is, you know, in the neighborhood of 50% that it's an absolutely legal car, maybe from Indiana or Michigan or some other place.
It at least gave the police the right to go up and investigate further.
Why isn't Mr. Flynn right that they should have just taken a look at the back? And if they'd seen a valid Michigan plate or a valid temporary Illinois tag, then there's no problem. It takes 1 second. I mean, the cost of checking it out is so minor. It's not like you're asking the police to send something off to a lab and to do all sorts of complicated things.
I think the Boris case that Mr. Flynn cites is an opposite, and that the police don't have a duty to investigate every possible alternative.
Of course not every possible alternative, but when it takes them 1 second to go just glance at the back of the car, there's a calculus going on here.
I still don't think that changes the fact that the probable cause existed, and the Illinois Vehicle Code mandates that there be a front license plate, and that's the angle that the officers had, and that's the alternative reason that the district court decided that they had the right to approach the car.
Well, and then the district court may or may not have been right about that. I mean, that's what we're here to decide.
Those are the arguments on behalf of the government. If the court has any additional questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, we will rest on our brief and the arguments this morning.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Yesparo. Mr. Flynn, how much time does he have? 5 minutes?
Your Honor, when the police car pulled up alongside, it's clear he was boxed in. They're directly in the middle of the road was their testimony.
He couldn't have been really boxed in because he was able to drive away.
Along the curb, Your Honor, but I think the average driver would have felt compelled to stop. And secondly, with the flashing red lights, I think that sends a message to any driver that they have a duty to stop and basically freeze. I mean, we're all trained. You see the lights on an emergency vehicle flashing.
Let me ask you this. Why, if the gun was thrown away, why wouldn't that have been an abandonment of the gun and not be suppressible under any theory here?
Your Honor, the motion was to suppress the items found in the car, which included two ski masks, a pry bar, a coat hanger,
but not the
cannabis.
Gun.
And we did not, in the underlying motion, ask to suppress
it. Because he disclaimed any ownership of the gun.
You mean in the statement?
No. By not moving to suppress it, he recognized that that would have been unsuccessful because it would have been abandoned.
That's correct, Your Honor. We did not move to suppress the gun.
Okay.
The theory of our case was that one of the officers testified as they went around the corner, they lost sight of him for a while, and we believe the evidence found in the car itself was very corroborative of what they were attempting to prove.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Flynn. And you were appointed, were you not?
I was.
We thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.